Welcome to HR Talk with HR Locker. In today's episode, we speak to Koch Lynch, who is a HR advisor with ISME, the Small and Medium Enterprise Association. Koch's current role with ISME involves providing HR support and key content such as guides, templates, and help people to keep up to date on issues related to HR in Ireland, especially for small and medium enterprises. She does this to ensure that they have access to information on all aspects of HR and current legislation, and providing guidance on any HR issues that may arise through the course of their business. And today's main theme of the podcast is returning people to work after COVID-19.
Welcome to today's HR Talk podcast. Today we will be speaking with Koch Lynch from ISME. She's a HR advisor there, and we'll be talking about how to return people to work after COVID-19. So Koch, we're delighted to have you with us today. Could you introduce yourself to everybody? I think you'll do a better job than me introducing on your behalf.
Yeah, no problem. So as Crystal said, I am the HR advisor with ISME, the Irish Small and Medium Enterprise Association. So my role involves providing advice to small and medium enterprises across a huge number of sectors within Ireland on everything HR related. So my background is a fairly strong HR background. I've worked across numerous sectors within the HR generalist sphere, and I moved into the advisory side about a year ago with Nursing Homes Ireland, and now I'm currently working with ISME.
Great. So thankfully we're kind of out a little bit towards the end of this, or the beginning of this new normal, whatever we want to call it. So I suppose the main questions that we are getting, and this is what we spoke about earlier as well, is what we're getting from our customers is, okay, so I can open my business again. I want to return my employees to work after, and they've been on the COVID, the government COVID payment. What procedures do I need to follow now to get them to come back to work?
Okay, so this is, it's a question that we get a lot in ISME as well. And I suppose there's a number of aspects to it. The first is that you absolutely need to ensure that your business is compliant with the National Return to Work Safety Protocols. So these are a set of protocols that the government has put together around reopening, and they have a number of measures that you have to have in place. So the first thing you have to do if you're thinking about reopening is you have to complete a risk assessment around COVID-19 and your business. And then you have to, off the back of that risk assessment, you have to compile a COVID-19 response plan. Now, there's a great document on the Health and Safety Authority website. It's a template plan, and it's the template I've used for ourselves in ISME. It's the template I point people to. It's just a very easy to follow one. So that plan covers everything from measures to ensure social distancing. So that can be anything from one-way entry and exit systems, making sure the desks are 2 meters apart. If they can't be 2 meters apart, that you have screens in place. And then down to even silly things like the use of the bathroom, the use of the canteen facilities, all that kind of thing, that you have measures and processes in place to ensure that social distancing can be observed. You also have to have appropriate signage, so that's around the signs and symptoms of COVID-19, hand washing procedures, respiratory etiquette, all that kind of thing. Then you need to look at your cleaning procedures. So there's a requirement within those protocols that you increase your cleaning. So everything should be cleaned at least twice a day and disinfected where necessary. You also need to ensure that your employees have filled out an employee questionnaire at least 3 days in advance of the return to work. That covers off, you know, have they had signs and symptoms of COVID? Have they been in contact with a suspected or confirmed COVID case? But it also covers off, are they in the at-risk category? Okay. So you need to find that out. It's very important, because if somebody is an at-risk employee, you may need to take extra procedures around them. Then you have to have an induction organised. So again, that induction is around training your employees on all the aspects of COVID-19, the COVID-19 response plan, who their COVID-19 officer is. So every workplace has to have a COVID-19 officer. The training also involves, what to do if somebody starts showing symptoms in the workplace, how to deal with that, and contact log as well. You need to train them on how to use their contact log. So you have to keep a log if anybody is going to be in close contact with somebody. Okay. So that is kind of the training requirement side of it. And then in terms of actually getting them back to work, obviously you need to give them reasonable notice of return to work. It's not
to come tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. You can't ring them at 9 o'clock on Friday night saying I need you on Monday morning.
You have to be
careful. You have to be aware that there may be circumstances like childcare, family commitments. They may be looking after somebody who's ill, all that kind of thing. So you have to give them notice of return to work. And you also have to take into account, you know, and be reasonable around their own circumstances at the moment and give them enough time to try and find solutions if there are problems. And the thing to note on that one is that in terms of that kind of engagement with employees, it's so important to document those conversations. So if somebody rings you up and says, look, I've got your notification of return to work, but I have 3 kids. I only have creche 2 days a week. I can't come back. You know, you need to engage with that employee, but you also need to document your evidence that you have engaged with that employee on it. Mm-hmm. And then I suppose the other aspect of it is in terms of getting them back on the payroll, you know, that's fairly straightforward. There are options around other supports available. There's the temporary wage supplement scheme. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if that's an option for your business, that is still available. They've confirmed that it's available until the end of August.
So
if that's an option, you can absolutely do that. And then it's just bringing them back into work. But the compliance piece is so, so important. And the HSA website is the place I point everybody to on the compliance piece, because they have some fantastic resources, free downloadable signage, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to ask you. There is the signage, all those yellow posters, I presume. Yes. And they're all, you can get them all from the HSA website.
You can. And they even have the floor graphics. If you have points where you have to queue within the workplace, canteens, anything like that, they have the floor graphics and everything there to print out and put up.
So I think, you know, once you can, I suppose once you have that kind of audit done, that's kind of when you're going to start from, you know, to make sure then you've got everything in place.
Yeah.
Ideally. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, people want to kind of open up and bring their employees back into the workplace. But, you know, a lot of companies, I suppose maybe their business has taken a huge hit the last couple of months. So for those companies who it's just not financially viable to bring back all the employees, you know, so if the budget just isn't there, how do you recommend people kind of handle layoffs during this period? Or if somebody's been on COVID for the COVID payment for the last 2 months or 3 months and now, unfortunately, the budget's just not there to bring them back. How do you think companies should go around that?
Yeah, so it's an unfortunate situation. Yeah. And it's not a situation that anybody wants to find themselves in. But I think the important piece to remember through all of it is that everything you do around redundancies, layoffs, has to be transparent and it has to be done in a fair manner. So essentially, any kind of a layoff like this will become a redundancy situation. The work isn't there, you know, it's the job that is gone, not the employee, etc. So it's a redundancy situation. So the key thing in any redundancy situation is that, you know, everything has to be fair and transparent. The selection criteria has to be absolutely see-through, you know, even down to as far as the scoring mechanism whereby the employee selected scored 32 and the employee not selected scored 33.
Yeah.
It has to be that measurable. And this is in order to avoid further down the road unfair dismissal cases, which, you know, no employer wants at any stage, but particularly not when they're struggling to get back on their feet. Mm. So in terms of the process, they have to inform the employees that they are at risk and they have to consult regarding any alternatives available. So that would mean, you know, giving them written notice that their job is at risk of redundancy, allowing for a consultation period, you know, meeting with the employee to discuss, are there any alternatives? You know, employees at this stage, they might be jumping for a job share arrangement or something like that. So all of those have to be considered. And then if at that stage there is no alternative, then it's about giving them the notice of redundancy. And if they're eligible for the redundancy payments, their statutory notice period, any of their accrued annual leave, all that kind of thing.
Yeah. So basically the fact that they've been on that COVID break, it doesn't make a difference. They're still going into that normal redundancy routine.
Exactly. So everything is still as per how you would have done it a year ago before COVID-19.
Yeah. So, I mean, we spoke about that. You touched on that briefly. You know, is bringing people part-time back an option? You know, what if they don't want to take that part-time option? Mm. You know, how would you kind of deal with that?
So there is a lot of employment contracts will have a clause in it that allows for short time should the employer require it. Now, short time is it's a very definite concept within the law. And it is if they're working less than half their hours or if they are receiving less than half of their usual pay. So if that is in your contract, you can impose that on employees. Now, it's important to note that usually after 4 weeks of short time, an employee can claim that it is a redundancy situation. Okay. There has been legislation brought in that has paused that entitlement until the 10th of August, as it stands at the moment. So mm-hmm. nobody can claim redundancy until the 10th of August. But after that, as the law stands at the moment, they may be able to claim redundancy. If you don't have that clause in your contract, or if you want to bring somebody back, say they normally work 5 days and you want to bring them back for three, so it's not falling within the definition of short time, it becomes kind of engaging with the employee and it does have to be negotiated. So you mm-hmm. can't impose a unilateral contract change on an employee. They do have to agree with that, with the change, and it does have to be kind of signed off. You have to have evidence that they've agreed with it. So that can be, you know, it can be a bit of a difficult conversation. It can be a bit of an emotional conversation. However, you know, you can go into explaining that the alternatives of this, you're doing this to try and save yeah. jobs. The alternatives may be redundancy down the line. So it's going to be an emotional and a tough conversation. But the feedback we're getting in ISME is that a lot of people are happy to take it on a temporary basis at the moment if it means that, you know, the business keeps running and people have jobs to go back to.
Yeah, and I think that communication is key, is that you're not mm-hmm. just posting a letter into them, that you're actually having that discussion with people, you know, that you're actually engaging with them to explain the situation. You know,
absolutely. It's absolutely yeah. key. And even when you have them on temporary layoff, you know, it is advisable to keep communicating with them, you know, touch base, explain, you know, if you're reviewing the situation on a monthly basis or however you're reviewing it, to explain that to employees, you know, so that they don't feel like they're just left in the cold, wondering what happens next, wondering, are they going to have the money to pay the mortgage in 2 months' time? You know, communication is just so key at the moment.
Yeah. I think especially because it's a stressful time for everybody. Mm-hmm. Nobody really kind of knows what's going to happen. So at yeah. least if you're keeping people in the loop of what's to expect down the line,
exactly.
it might make things easier, I think. Okay, so for those companies, so you've done everything, you've done your audit, you've put everything in place, they're filling out the form, and you have an employee who informs you that they have an underlying health issue and they don't feel comfortable returning to the workplace. How do you deal with this?
Okay, so this is a very tricky one, and it's important, yeah. I suppose, to note at the offset that it is specified within the National Return to Work Safety Protocols, which are the documents that the HSA, if they're inspecting your premises, are going to be using. It is specified that, you know, if you do have vulnerable workers in the workplace, you have to go above and beyond to ensure their safety. So the other thing to be hugely aware of is that underlying health issues may be considered as a disability depending on the health issue. So this could end an employer up in tricky waters with discrimination under the Equality Act if they go about this wrong. So really and truly, the first step, if they've notified the employee that they have work available, they're hoping that they'll return to work, they sent out their questionnaire, and the employee comes back to them and says, look, I have X, Y, and Z. I'm really not comfortable coming back into the workplace. Again, it comes back to that communication. Pick yeah. up the phone, have a chat with them, you know, discuss what the issues are, discuss where they're worried about, and discuss whether this is on medical advice or it's that they're not comfortable. So if it's mm-hmm. they have an underlying health issue and they have issues within the workplace, you know, that's where you kind of explain to them about the protocols that you've put in place, the audits that you've done. You know, you may decide that they may be comfortable if they had an isolated workspace.
Yeah.
It may involve a rejig of desks and that kind of thing. Okay. You know, but the other big thing, and I know this is something that I've got a lot within the queries that we get into ISME, is the public transport aspect of it. People are very wary to go back in public transport, particularly those with an underlying health issue. So it may be a case where you might look at, you know, is there a local car park near you that you could get a corporate discount on for a certain amount of time, anything like that. And then the other thing is to be absolutely sure that the employee has engaged with their own medical professional on this. So employers need to remember that they're not medical professionals, and they need to ask the employee to get medical advice on whether or not they are fit to be in the work. If the employee comes back with a cert from their medical, from their GP, stating that they are not fit to be in the workplace at the moment, then you cannot pressure them to come in. And that's so important.
Yeah.
If they're certified that they're not fit to be in the workplace in this current environment, you know, you treat it like any other long-term absence. You do your meetings, you touch base with them, you check it in with them, you advise them of what's going on in the workplace, but you do not pressure them to come back to work. If it's a case where their GP has said they're happy to do it, but they're just not comfortable, you know, as I said before, it goes back into looking at the alternatives, looking at, is there a way that they could work when the office is less populated? Mm. Is there a particular PPE, you know, hand sanitizers at their desk, you know, yeah, that you have made provisions whereby there may be a room that's not used that they could use to eat their lunch in, so they're not in the general canteen, all that kind of stuff. So again, it's down to communication, and yeah, it's just so important.
I think that's the key then for that person who's feeling that anxiety, just to engage with them,
exactly,
explain what you've put in place. And exactly like I said, maybe, you know, maybe the isolated unit or something like that, or yeah, just to reassure them that you have screens up, or even if they want to just come in and have a look at the workplace first, or, you know, it's really down to that engagement.
Exactly.
Time for that. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's huge. And, you know, it can be, it's what I think employers have to remember, and I think this is something that we're getting at. Employers have been, during all of this, their businesses have been shut. They've been up the walls. They've been trying to figure out how to keep a business going. They've been trying to save the jobs. And then they're finally at a place where they can reopen. But they have to remember that it's hugely concerning for their employees as well. And while, you know, you may need this person in the workplace, you also have to remember that they're extremely stressed out. They're worried about this. This is their health, or somebody they live with. It's their health, yeah, that's at risk. So it's just around the communication and trying to find, you know, a ground where people are understanding each other and where you can go forward from that.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point you talked about there, was that it may not be the employee. It could be somebody at home, mm, who has an underlying health issue, or has, you know, that's the concern. It might not just be the individual. So again,
yeah,
just to kind of communicate and engage with them and figure out what the actual issue is.
And
how we can work together. Yeah,
I think. Yeah, like if somebody is a primary caregiver, mm, for somebody in their 90s or something, and they're going back to work in retail, meeting people, customers every day, you know, they may, yeah, just not be comfortable taking the risk with that person that they're a primary caregiver to. Mm. So, you know, it is a case of having the conversations and finding out what can be done, what can't be, yeah, done. Yeah,
and it's totally understandable. You know,
absolutely,
that the person's anxiety, and it's totally understandable. Mm. So it is, and I think as well, from both an employer and an employee perspective, nobody's ever done this before. None of us have ever done this before. Mm. So, yeah, so you have to be able to communicate with each other and figure out the best, you know, after you've done your protocol, follow the protocols, you've put in your audit, you've got all your signage. And after that, it's kind of that communication, trying to figure out how best to get through it together as
team,
really. Yeah,
exactly. So I think I was talking to somebody about this recently, and they were saying I need to find a HR person who lived through the 1918
exactly
pandemic to figure out what to do. So we're all in uncharted waters.
Yeah, exactly. And so I mean, it's definitely like that person who's at home with that 90-year-old woman. Mm. Okay, how do we get through this together? Because neither of us have done this before. So yeah, you know, let's figure it out.
Exactly.
So unfortunately, I've heard this question touted around the place is, for those employees who are better off claiming the COVID payment until the end of August, you've asked them to come back and they've said they prefer to stay on the payment. Is there any way you can get them? Can you make them come back? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, and it's a very tricky one. And it is, you know, when you take yourself out of your employee head and you look at this, and somebody might have been working part time and suddenly they're getting €350, you know, it is very understandable. But I think the first place to start is that as soon as there's work available, that pandemic unemployment payment, it's available for employees who are out of work due to COVID-19. That may be on a temporary basis or a permanent basis. But the minute you have work available and you write out to them and notify them that there is work available, they are no longer eligible for that,
yeah,
payment. Now, it gets a bit tricky because that payment is between themselves and the Department of Social Welfare, and the employer isn't involved, so it's up to them to sign off. You know, so they may not sign off and want to continue claiming it and all the rest of it. But the important thing is that if that is the case, you engage again. It comes back to this communication where engage with the employee, you know, go through the health and safety side. Are they worried about the health and safety in the workplace? Engage with them on any issues they raise. Are there any underlying health conditions? Engage with them on those. Is there childcare issues? Have a look at how flexible you could be. Could they take parental leave? That kind of options. And then if it comes down to just as it is genuinely that they're just better off on the 350 pandemic payment, you essentially, you fall back on your internal procedures as they stand. You know, you write out to them, you're expecting them back in work on this date. If they don't turn up, it's an unauthorised absence. If they continue to not turn up, you know, you go through your unauthorised absence procedure and go down the disciplinary route. And ultimately, it could result in termination of a contract if someone continually doesn't turn up to work. Now, obviously, nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to get into that kind of a situation in the workplace. But, you know, unfortunately, you as an employer needs people in work to get the business going again and all the rest of it. And if somebody is just point blank refusing, it's business as usual with their internal absence procedures and disciplinary procedures.
And I think that's something that we spoke about before the call, was that your policies and procedures and your handbooks still stand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and we'd all hope that everybody is showing that bit of understanding given the current circumstances. But ultimately, you know, if it's a case where your business may go to the wall because somebody thinks they prefer to stay on the 350 payment, fall back on your procedures, fall back on your handbook. That's what it's there for.
Yeah, exactly. And those things, just because the COVID payment and that kind of thing, it hasn't changed the employment legislation kind of thing. So
exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, we've covered, there does seem to be an awful lot to get up and running in terms of, you know, doing that audit, get the signage right, all that kind of thing. Are there supports for SMEs at the moment to kind of get them to open up? Or, you know, how can I, if I really, really just don't know how I'm going to open up, what are the best supports available for me?
Yeah, so there are. There's a few supports out there. And I suppose in terms of the financial side, there's a couple of grants available. There is a restart grant that's tied into rates that employers paid in 2019, and that's available from local authorities. There is, if you're moving into more online, there's an online trading grant that's available. And then in terms of the actual, the actual getting the knowledge and where to go, the HSA website is absolutely fantastic. The National Standards Authority website, they have a great document on preparing the workplace. And then ourselves in ISME, we have general business advice and support. We have a Corona section on our website, coronavirus section on our website. Yeah. We're also engaged in representing and lobbying for SMEs across a range of industries. So we've been particularly active on that since the end of February around financial supports during COVID-19, because it is a huge issue. We've also recently launched a back to business platform. So this is fantastic. It's for members and non-members alike. We have webinars, free webinars, advice, blogs. We're running virtual networking events at the minute, so people get kind of a 3-minute slot to pitch their business to other businesses. So that can be fantastic. And then we have, you know, we have our dedicated HR advisory service, and we have kind of frequently asked question documents and all that kind of thing. And then we also offer a number of webinar series. So we're covering an awful lot of topics around marketing online. So for businesses looking to move online, data protection with the remote working, you know, the return to work plans, all that kind of thing. And then I think the other thing that our members are finding fantastic from ISME is that we do have our Advantage Affinity program, where we can reduce costs by availing of discounts that other businesses are offering to ISME members, and that includes yourselves and HR Locker, actually.
Yeah.
So that's in terms of the getting the startup advice. I would strongly advise that you log on to the HSA website and our own website, www.isme.ie.
Yeah, and I would definitely advocate for that, that I think sometimes as a small business, you really feel like you're by yourself and you don't have anybody to kind of to lean on or whatever. Whereas I have found with this, the supports are fantastic. There's so many, a lot of people are going through what you're going through as well. So it's important to kind of reach out. And I do think in the last kind of, in a couple of months, we've lost that kind of networking element. But, you know, we've learned, we were in this new kind of virtual networking now. And so those events are actually, they're good. That, you know, if you engage them, you get back. So I definitely
absolutely and there's so many. I mean, we did our first virtual networking event there, and the feedback on it was fantastic. And like you said, it was just nice for people to be able to hear you're not on your own. Other people are trying to figure this out as well. Everybody feels like they've been just thrown into a tornado and they don't know whether to turn left or right. You know, it's just fantastic for people just to know that there is support out there.
Yeah, I mean, even we spoke about these questions, and I came to you saying that these are the questions that our customers were asking, and they're no different to the questions that you were getting from business exactly. members. So yeah. I think it's everybody doesn't really know what to do. So, but I do think that I certainly have looked at the HSA website in terms of the back to work protocol and the audits. That was extremely helpful to us. And then definitely in terms of the ISME webinars and stuff like that, I found them very helpful. And like I said, we've listed ourselves as getting 15% off for anybody who is looking for HR Locker or HR software at the moment. But there's great other things. There's different accountancy software and different things as well. So I definitely would advise people to go and have a look. In terms of getting in contact with you, the best place for people to go is to the website, or?
Yeah, absolutely. The website would be the starting point for anyone who's interested in learning more. And as I say, there's an awful lot of content up there, and not all of it is members only. There's an awful lot that's not members. So the website, and then, you know, we have the info@isme.ie email address, and, you know, the phone numbers and everything are on the website. So if they're interested in learning more about joining up or anything like that, you know, they can get in contact with us that way.
That's fantastic. So thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. I hope it's given people a lot of information of kind of those steps, you know, guidance and steps, mm-hmm. what you need to do to kind of get the business ready to open up. And I do think start with your audit, understand what you need to do next, and just keep following the steps. And, you know, don't forget that your own policies and procedures and your handbooks still apply.
Yeah.
And just keep working through the steps, and we'll all get through this.
Exactly.
You're almost there.
Communicate with your employees. I think that's the other big message I'd like people to take from this, is that everybody is human, and just communicate with your employees, and it will make the process smoother for everyone.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So thank you very much, and hope everybody enjoyed that. So take care.
Thanks a million.
Thank you for listening to another episode of HR Talk with HR Locker, the podcast that brings you all things HR, adult development, remote working, and deliberately developmental organizational culture. We're available on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you get your favorite podcasts. Subscribe now and tune in for the next episode.